Don't make it weird, the big axe. That was not the right thing to say, she was aware. For a moment, she worried she had upset him and that this big bear, tiny cub spooning would stop. But he took it in stride.
It wasn't always a boy apartment. I was married once.
Andrea fake gasped, but was actually a little surprised. I do not believe anyone could give up the big axe.
Well, that's sort of the thing there. You meet someone and they see everything great about you. Funny or a great musician or good-looking or a superhero that saved 15 cities from certain destruction.
And an exceedingly humble superhero at that, Andrea interjected.
After a while, that's just who you are and you can't impress that other person anymore. You defeat the dinosaur army of Tyrant Rex and it just doesn't impress her. You're just some guy who forgets to take out the trash and works inconvenient hours.
Well, Andrea replied, I've never been married, but I lost my virginity to a guy who turned out to be Amish and on his rumspringa. And the second guy I had sex with was also an Amish dude on his rumspringa. So, we've all made mistakes. Andrea flipped over and buried her head in the big axe's hairy chest. She had never cared for chest hair before, but she had never been with an 8-footer built like an oak tree.
Andrea, I was thinking.
As soon as the big axe began to speak, she immediately racked her brain, preparing for a soft answer to the question she had been dreading.
This is fun, and this is really good. I'm not seeing anyone else, and maybe we could just... We could just only see each other?
Silence. She went through countless good ways of answering this. She had spent so much of the last few years traveling, and she had never wanted to be held down in one place by one person, and now she had a job that she really liked, and she was not ready to commit to something while she was trying to figure her life out, and how long had she been silent? It had been a really long time. Crap. The big axe. It's just... She reached out for the next words, but came up with empty air. Come on, you majored in English and European history. And he was of European descent. Crap. How long had she been silent now? The big axe tapped her gently on the arm.
We need to get going if you're going to get to work on time.
They drove back to her place in complete silence. Andrea felt especially awful when she realized how high the tolls were on the Triborough Bridge. Chapter 13. The Executive Team.
We have to go to space.
Dr. Srinivasan was deadly serious. Also, he had grown a mustache, and it really worked for him. In a conference room within the research and development floor, he had dimmed the lights and a high-resolution image of Earth projected on the entire 10x10 wall behind him. The planet spun on its axis, revolving around the sun. Andrea felt a bit like she was in an exciting eighth-grade science lesson.
I'm listening. Ms. O responded. She and Andrea sat with the other scientists in their official cup lab coats, who excelled at nodding at appropriate times.
Before anyone could speak, Ms. O leaned over to Andrea and whispered,
"Remind me later that this lab needs a hologram machine. I just don't think two dimensions will cut it going forward. It's like a 4th of July parade without the march of the painted donkeys. You're probably thinking you've never seen one, but once you've seen one 4th of July parade with a march of the painted donkeys, you can't really go back to one without.
I will have to check one out, Andrea offered.
Have to go to Faroe County, Georgia.
We found the wormhole!
Dr. Srinivasan clicked on his smartphone, and the projected image changed to reveal a slight discoloration just above and to the right of the planet. Ms. O clapped.
I love you, R&D kids. I was worried we were wasting money on the satellite and that damn dish we built out in the desert. Okay, technically, a kid on the internet found the wormhole, Dr. Srinivasan admitted. But we confirmed it with our instruments. I admire your honesty. Thank you, Miss O. Dr. Srinivasan clicked again, and the image zoomed to the discoloration, which still only looked like a discoloration. As you can see, it is just a little outside our atmosphere. We could be out to it in about 2 hours. So, we gotta launch the spaceship? The normally reserved Dr. Srinivasan attempted to manage his excitement, but he failed completely. He broke into a boyish smile. Yes! We finally get to use the spaceship! Gonna be expensive, Andrea. It's not in the current budget, Andrea replied. You heard her, Doc. Not in the budget.
Please! Can't we ask them to extend the budget? Maybe we could destroy the wormhole early and save Earth. Worst case scenario, I still get to fly the spaceship.
You sure this thing works? Ms. O asked.
Yeah, I mean, it's got escape pods if it doesn't. Please let me fly the spaceship. I'm the only one who knows how to fly it.
Ms. O squinted. You're the head of R&D. Your specialty is biological enhancement.
Yes, admitted Dr. Srinivasan. That is true. But then you okayed the spaceship, and it's always been my dream to go into space, so I did not allow anyone else to train to use it. Since then, I have not asked for a raise, I have worked overtime and weekends on every project, and I have taken dish duty twice as often as everyone else. I have the records to prove it. I anticipated this conversation someday happening, and I felt that would be enough to let this slide.
Sensing a critical moment, the collected lab coats clapped mightily and whistled. A variety of, great job, Srini, and you deserve this, calls broke into a unified, let him fly, let him fly. Ms. O raised a hand and the cheers ceased. I'll talk to the client and see if the federal government will pay for one spaceflight. Dr. Srinivasan looked like the girl at her Sweet 16 party who just got the exact car she wanted.
Oh, this is, oh, I'm going to go put on my suit. I got a suit made just in case we ever got to use this spaceship.
Ms. O waved toward the door. Everyone out now. After all the lab coats had exited and Dr. Srinivasan skipped out of the room, Ms. O turned to Andrea. I'm going to get yelled at by someone about this one. We send the big axe and fuego. If there's any hardware out there keeping the space hole open, they should be able to handle it. Anyone else?
Inspector Well actually could be useful.
Ms. O nodded. Agreed.
It's possible something might come through the wormhole. They might do one of those take-me-to-your-leader deals.
You're right, said Ms. O. I should be there, in case that happens.
Submitting paperwork on behalf of Ms. O to her superiors came with two challenges Andrea had slowly learned to combat. First, she did not know who her superiors were, or what. The executive team existed in a cloud of mystery. Andrea had entertained all of the following theories about the masters of the company. One, H.P. Lovecraftian elder gods. Two, benevolent tech industry giants wishing to remain anonymous. Three, rogue CIA agents who had faked their own deaths. Four, hyperintelligent dolphins. Five, non-corporeal beings that existed in neither time nor space, looking to make a few bucks running a mid-sized business. Six, her parents, creating an elaborate ruse to teach her a lesson about something. Of all of these, she felt most confident in her elder god's guess, but worried far more often that it could somehow be her parents. Regardless, she struggled with questions such as how to address them.
dear sirs and madams? That would not work since she did not know what the male-female composition of the executive team was. Attention, masters of the corporation and someday the world, seemed presumptuous. Her second problem was deciphering the acronyms and abbreviations Ms. O had become accustomed to using over the years. Indeed, most of her co-workers regularly communicated using jargon that meant nothing to her, and she was forbidden from asking for clarification. Hey, Andrea, let Ms. O know that there's a Kim in Branson, Missouri. Seems like a Met going for MR, someone would say to her. Yes, Andrea would say back. I will tell her about the Kim and the Met. Hey, Andrea, turns out an Ames was the William behind the DC in Seattle, she would also hear. Her initial confusion led her to read through full reports on these events. Scanning pages and pages of notes, she discovered that Branson, Missouri's mayor was kidnapped by an alien as part of a complex plan to murder everyone in the city through high blood pressure. A Kim, therefore, was actually a K-I-M, a kidnapped mayor. And a Met was a M-E-T, likely a murderous extraterrestrial or a murdering extraterrestrial. This also cleared up her confusion over people referring to pets, which she now understood to mean peaceful extraterrestrials. This was slightly disappointing, as she was hoping people were going to bring pets to the office. Also because she cogitated on the fact that she lived in a world where mayors were kidnapped and aliens murdered people often enough that both needed linguistic shortcuts. Ugh, I'm so tired of saying the mayor was kidnapped and murdered by a Martian, she imagined someone in a top hat saying. Half my day is spent explaining how many city chiefs were eaten by creatures from Alpha Centauri. Oh, I could just say Kim was eaten by a Met. Delightful. Also, MR stood for Murderous Revenge. It was safe that the M in most of the acronyms referred to murder. Words like Ames and William were trickier to decipher, and for different reasons. She slowly pieced together that Ames was an acronym, but she could not put together from reports what it meant. Her next strategy involved saying things like, "Yep, got a problem with an Ames. Yep, an A," to her co-workers, and hoping they would cut her off and finish the sentence. This did not work. Her co-workers waited patiently for her to finish her thought. One called for a doctor, thinking that Andrea was having a stroke. Her next line of attack was to say the wrong full name, laugh knowingly, and then wait to be corrected. "We got a real problem with an Ames," she'd say. "Amoeba investigation manatee spunky, har har. Really worried about an Ames. Anchovy in my spinach, guffaw." Regrettably, she did not have Inspector Well actually around while attempting this, and the plan failed. She did not find success until a lucky day when she walked by the IT specialists having lunch in the cafeteria. Essen Ahmed was teasing his co-worker, Gilby Gilroy, about missing a line of code, or something like that. Andrea had no clue. She quickly turned and joined in with, "Yeah, I bet Gilby doesn't even know what an Ames is." The IT'ers had a spirited laugh as Ahmed slowly explained, "Artificial intelligence manipulating society." They continued laughing. Gilby looked crestfallen. Andrea felt horrible and yet still took the high five so as not to arouse suspicion. The William was not an acronym and thus took more research. It was obviously a person, but not a single person. The William was an Ames in Seattle. But the William was also Apocalypse Yao in Houston. She did not feel comfortable faking her way through this phrase, and Gilby no longer sat with the other IT specialist at lunch. She probably owed him an apology card, if that was a thing. Instead, she had to wait for people to come to her. She remained patient until the Big Axe told her that Lava Man had saved the city of Coeur d'Alene by figuring out the real William was Evil MacDonald, a farmer who grew bee worms, brainworms, and snuck them into school lunches to turn the children of the town into his merciless army. All along they had thought Major Malfunction had been the William, but it turns out he was just the GFH, goon for hire, figured out 3 days later. Yes, he was the William then, the main villain, Andrea had said.
You didn't know what William meant, the Big Axe had said.
You'll never know, the Big Axe. You'll never know.
It's from back in the old days, the early days of superheroes. I think someone had an accent and pronounced villain as William, and it stuck. It's the main bad guy.
You'll never be able to prove that I didn't know that, the Big Axe. Now she sat typing out an email starting with, Dear Benevolent Executive Team. She then deleted the word benevolent, feeling that it suggested there might be some question. She continued, Ms. O would greatly appreciate the finance department approving her request for a space flight that could potentially determine the William behind the egg. This expenditure will pay off in that she likely will have enough info to determine if we are dealing with a pet or a met. She added a few courteous lines of thanks and hit send. Immediately, the phone at her desk rang. Hello, she said. Ms. O's office, Andrea speaking.
Times Square, said a raspy voice. You as well.
The joke on them is that I like Times Square, Ms. O said, as they pushed through the wave of human flesh at 43rd and Broadway. They want to show how unhappy they are with my request by sending us here, but when I was a little girl growing up in Fair Oaks County, this is what I dreamed of, and I will never get tired of it. You hate it, right? It's awful. The rest of the world was bracing for destruction, but still Times Square was full of tourists concerned solely with purchasing the most authentic M&M paraphernalia or deciding which fragrance of jewelry they would pay twice as much for here than in their hometown. Andrea reimagined Times Square as the scene of a massive battle between two armies of tourists who forgot what the fight was about because they were so busy staring up at a random building. Any moment they would look down and, instead of randomly bumping into each other and buying street churros, they would pull out blades from their scabbards and slice their enemies' throats. You're probably wondering why you're here, Ms. O said. Most likely they want to meet you because they think you have potential. It's also possible they want to meet you because they think you're a mole working for one of their enemies. Now we just have to figure out who the vessel is. The execs never let anyone see them other than yours truly, but they will choose to communicate through a vessel, a person they possess, and speak through. Times Square did not lack for people who looked devoid of their own thoughts, but Andrea could not guess what she was looking for. The person dressed up as Hello Kitty? The guy hawking a bus tour? The angry native elbowing through and cursing at the tourists under her breath? Was that what she looked like right now? Hey, do you like comedy? Asked a skinny 20-something man with big curly brown hair. Yes, said Ms. O, but moved on before the man could pitch his show. I can't lie to him, she explained to Andrea, but he's not the vessel, so I don't have time. After the meeting, remind me to go find him again and take a flyer for his show.
Hey! You want a picture of you two young ladies?
Asked a disheveled old man sitting amongst dozens of caricatures of celebrities and normals riding skateboards past the Empire State Building. Continuing in his gruff Brooklyn accent,
Also, we need to discuss this trip to outer space.
Andrea, sit while this man draws our picture. The two sat and posed. Ms. O smiling like she had just stepped off the bus from Fair Oaks County and could not believe a man would want to draw her picture.
Andrea guessed her own face resembled that of a surly toddler on a disappointing Christmas morning, forced to sit for a family portrait.
"It's not in the budget," the artist said.
"It's key to the project. You can't ask me to cook a ham dinner and then just hand me a pig. I need a pig-killing knife and vegetables."
After adding a few strokes to the picture, the artist looked back up and said,
"We will need to charge the client. The client will be displeased."
"That's because they haven't eaten the ham dinner yet. You gotta wait for the payoff."
"Who is going to space?"
the artist asked. "Myself, Dr. Srinivasan, King Tiger, the Big Axe, and Senora Fuego."
The artist paused from the conversation and from his art. Staring straight forward, he said,
"One second. This man is trying to regain control of his mind. Okay, we're back. You're taking Andrea with you."
"I don't see how Andrea will help," Ms. O noted, and Andrea nodded, having no interest in going to space. She did not particularly enjoy air travel, although she did love free movies. She assumed there would be no free movies on the trip to space.
"We need you right now, Ms. O," the artist responded.
"You could just make a Junebug blush with talk like that," Ms. O said with a wink.
"You are necessary to our plans, and we need Andrea with you. If an alien attempted to kill you, we would like her there to sacrifice her life to save yours."
"Andrea, you're coming to space," Ms. O said. "Be sure to jump in front of any alien death rays."
Andrea shrugged. "That's fine. Injury caused by alien death rays is covered under my health plan." It was.
"While I have you here, I'd really like to discuss my request for a moon base," Ms. O said.
The artist threw his hands in the air.
"You always ask about the moon base. We do not see the point in investing company funds into a moon base. What is the point of a moon base?"
Ms. O answered the question with her own question. "What's the point of a newborn child? You find out when you get there."
"No other superhero corp has a moon base."
"You are making my argument for me."
"This conversation is about to conclude. Please take your drawing."
The artist handed Andrea their picture, a caricatured representation of Andrea and Ms. O riding a tandem bike in front of the Statue of Liberty. Chapter 14. Dr. Srinivasan, Director of Research and Development.
"It would be nice if that axe was able to cut all this tension," Andrea joked to the Big Axe.
They sat inside Dr. Srinivasan's pride, Space Cup 1, suggesting his hope that there would be a second. To Andrea, the structure looked like a 35-foot-tall, stubby metallic thumb, painted in official orange and blue cup colors with the giant logo across the top, or at least what would be the top once they were in orbit. Was there a top in outer space? This was neither here nor there, Andrea decided. Above the logo were two windows curving down, appearing as the nail of the thumb. Dr. Srinivasan did not feel it looked like a thumb and was not amused by the suggestion. Now she sat directly across from the man who had just asked to enter into a relationship with her, only to get silence and what Andrea imagined was a face like an infant going through an especially puzzling poop. She should have answered, and she was prepared to discuss the subject now. She had plenty of time, as the two were strapped into their seats in their bottom level of the craft, with Senora Fuego and Inspector Well actually in the next level up, and Ms. O keeping a close eye on Dr. Srinivasan in the cockpit. They had been sitting in silence for the last 30 minutes since the lab coat strapped them in and left them alone to not talk to each other. The Big Axe did not immediately respond to Andrea, so she offered, "If it would make this less weird, I'm willing to let you go to second base." Smiling, the Big Axe responded,
It would be quite a feat in these suits.
Under the spacesuit, over the bra, Andrea said with a smile. Middle school rules.
You also might have noticed I'm strapped to the wall and can't reach you.
Andrea shook her head. Gotta want it, the big axe. Gotta want it. Perhaps the most surprising thing about the mission was that they had a big enough spacesuit for the big axe. They both sat in their bulky white get-ups waiting for the launch, talking through their bubble space helmets. The big axe raised an eyebrow.
I know what you're doing. I know you're thinking you can join the 100-mile-high club, but I'm not that kind of boy. I'm a gentleman.
Never forget you missed out on having this. Andrea would have gestured at herself if she had the use of her arms. In space. Loud beeps of significance emanated from inside and outside of the ship. Andrea could see the ceiling retract above them on a monitor just to the left of the big axe's head. The entire area filled with clouds of vapor from the enormous tank of water beneath them, and the ship shot into the air. The booster engines screamed as they rapidly ascended and the monitor flipped to a shot of the ground beneath them. Cup had built its launch pad on a deserted strip of Far Rockaway in Queens, and for a brief moment she could make out the A-train, and then John F. Kennedy Airport. And then the monitor flipped again to Dr. Srinivasan screaming from the cockpit. The sound came over a loudspeaker and,
I forgot to tell you! We're about to take off!
Was barely audible over the noise from the ascent. They felt the immense downward pull as the thumb accelerated, and Andrea felt the full effect of the 3x gravity operating on her. She had never in her life thought about proper diet on the day of a space trip, and was reconsidering the burrito. With guacamole. And chips. Also with guacamole on the side. It was a big day, however, and the best part of having a steady job was burritoistas saying, guac's extra, do you still want it? And her being able to respond, yes, I will pay for that guacamole. She felt like a Gilded Age robber baron eating that burrito and laughing at the common folk with their no-frills Mexican food. Enjoy the sour cream and salsa, peasants! She considered her queasiness. She regretted nothing. The booster rockets detached, and their speed leveled off. The big axe pulled off his helmet.
You can't say I never take you anywhere.
Andrea removed her helmet as well and responded, I'm more of a stay-in-and-watch-movies-on-the-couch kind of girl. We are miles above my couch. The monitor clicked again to show Dr. Srinivasan bursting with joy.
We're in space! Space! We have exited Earth's atmosphere! I'm flying a spaceship! It's really happening!
With a strange sort of arm swinging that might have resembled dancing, he clicked the monitor back off. I'm sorry about this morning, the big axe, she said. It's just, she wanted to pick the exact right words to say. All day she had composed her speech to make everything cool, and really it felt a little unfair that she had to do this right now, technically, at work. But it had been her idea to complicate everything with an inter-office romance, although the big axe did not work in the office very often since he was a field employee. But he had certainly been coming in more and more frequently since they became friends, and that should have been a big hint right there that this would not be a simple hookup. And crap! She was still not talking. It's just, she began again, and tried to ready the brilliant words she was about to expel. She would just explain that he was really great, and that was really part of the problem since her parents met when they were 15, and all three of her siblings were married by 23, and that was their life, but she had always wanted to be different, not for the sake of being different, but a little bit that too. And she had always envisioned herself as someone who would have exciting affairs around the world and then move on rather than commit herself to something only to watch it decay into a relationship of familiarity and contentment rather than of true enjoyment and exploration. And yes, she had dated some guys for longish periods, one over a year and a few others for over a quarter of a year. But she always felt she stayed too long out of obligation with someone she ended up hurting because she had let them think she was going to be there long term when she never intended to. And the big axe was so great. Maybe things could work out, but would it ever be as fun as it had been those first few weeks? And would it not be so much better to enjoy their time together without any labels or lines to cross so they could both do whatever they wanted without worrying about hurting each other? And she had still not talked. The big axe leaned in as much as he could, given his restraints.
We have literally traveled hundreds of miles in the time you have been trying to form this sentence.
Fair, she said. It's just that I want to keep doing what we're doing. You get to hook up with me and whomever else you want. Most guys would jump at that.
I'm not most guys. I am the big axe.
True, she agreed. You're 8 feet tall. And you have a magic axe.
I'm 8'4", and there's no such thing as magic, just science we don't understand yet.
It might have been the hottest sentence anyone had ever said to her.
I'll tell you what, Andrea Vernon. I have defeated the most powerful villains in the world. I faced Ballistico, who said he would see me and the whole city die before his eyes, and I cut him in half. An American bald eagle flew straight at me with her talons pointed at my eyes, and I ended her with a single swing. I triumphed over them, and I will triumph over your fear of commitment.
She felt equally intense, conflicting urges to jump on him and kiss him as hard as she could, and to open up the escape hatch and disappear into the void of space. She was strapped in, however, so she just said, I think my fear of commitment is a far more powerful adversary than you are prepared for, the big axe.
Every adversary thinks that.
The big axe and Señora Fuego, still secured by tether to the thumb, drifted toward the wormhole, where green and blue swirls drained into a central vortex. What had seemed so small in Dr. Srinivasan's first image was actually a flat circle a mile in diameter and completely invisible from the side. Andrea glanced up from organizing Ms. O's schedule to check in as the pair of superheroes separated and examined either side of the entrance to the void. You have a teleconference with the Volusia County Commission at 9 tomorrow, Andrea informed Ms. O. That could be big money. Can't cancel it. Can we clear some time after that? Ms. O asked as Inspector Well actually floated just above her shoulder, wearing the damn fedora. The IT department has you next for a presentation on the updates to CupNet. They say there are very exciting buttons you'll want to know about. Ms. O considered this for a moment. Might be a good idea to delay the new database until after we save the world. Andrea clicked on her tablet and created reminders to reschedule the meeting and push back the new database once she had returned to the terrestrial world of Wi-Fi. Señora Fuego's voice cracked over the speaker.
Nothing artificial. Whatever created it must be on the other side.
Ms. O placed her hand gently on Andrea's shoulder and said, I'm very sorry. But you have to talk to Inspector Will, actually. No offense, Inspector Will, actually. Inspector Will actually focused straight ahead, seeming not to hear them.
No offense taken.
Andrea gathered her inner strength and said, It's impressive how you keep that hat on your head in zero gravity, Inspector Will, actually. Inspector Will actually literally looked down on Andrea as he floated above her.
Well, actually, We're not in zero gravity. We certainly are experiencing diminished effects of gravity. But there are still gravitational forces operating on us.
Gotcha, said Andrea. But we have to get to work. This flight cost a lot of money, and if we don't discover anything, we'll be coming back shorter than Napoleon.
Well, actually, Napoleon was above average height for that time period, he said as the glow around his face brightened, giving Andrea another reason to not want to look at him.
Thank you, Inspector. Well, actually, this has been really helpful. I'm going to tell them to go through the wormhole. After all, there's no reason not to.
Well, actually, there are many reasons not to go through the wormhole. There might be no way back. The wormhole might lead to a world of fire. You'd be opening the company up to huge personal injury lawsuit. You would be much better off sending in a small camera to capture what's on the other side.
Ms. O leaned in on the microphone and asked,
Can you take that camera to your ex, the big ex?
Slowly and clumsily, Senora Fuego removed duct tape from a fanny pack, but a space fanny pack, so it was cool, tore a few pieces and secured a video camera to the big ex's big ex. They could hear her say, Don't worry, the big ex, I'll help you get all the sticky off later. Once she finished, the big axe floated close enough to the wormhole to stick the axe and the camera through. Andrea avoided eye contact with everyone as she tried to act as though she was not deeply concerned that her dear friend and frequent partner in sexual congress was floating near a potential window to Death and Fire Galaxy. In the cockpit, they could see the live feed from the camera right until it crossed the threshold to who knows where and the feed dropped out.
Give it a second, ordered Ms. O. All right. Now pull it back.
Just as it seemed he was about to, the axe slipped from his grasp and disappeared into the wormhole. The big axe, without hesitation, reached behind his back and released the tether with one hand while the other activated his jet propulsion system. Before anyone could speak, the big axe had traveled to the other side. Andrea did all she could do to remain silent and still and not break down watching her co-worker hookup buddy transport across the universe. Ms. O placed a hand on her shoulder and said, Give him a second.
Well, actually, said Inspector, well, actually, it has been several seconds already. I'm sorry, this is just how I am.
They waited. Nothing moved until Senora Fuego reached to release from her tether. Ms. O called out,
No, SF, hang in there. Sometimes when the kids fall down the well, you climb down to get him, and sometimes you let him climb back up and hope there ain't well monsters chasing him.
They continued waiting. Ms. O leaned over to Andrea and whispered, And move the meeting with the warehouse managers to after lunch. They're always in better moods after lunch. Andrea shook her head. They can't do after lunch because they have to meet with their crews to review the variants on the inventory reports at 1:30.
You're right. I suppose we'll have to hope they all ate well at breakfast.
The axe shot out of the wormhole with the big axe behind it in lukewarm pursuit, the relatively slow jetpack not keeping up at all with the speeding axe, which curved left and right, up and down. It seemed as though the axe had a mind of its own, until it came closer to the ship, and Andrea could see something was holding it.
We need to get out! And we need to get out now! The big axe declared over his radio.
Ms. O nodded to Dr. Srinivasan, who used the controls to retract the tethers and Senora Fuego. The axe headed straight for the cockpit window and then dropped down, only to resurface in what Andrea could see now was in the mouth of an animal that she would best describe as a radiant golden space puppy. It had big eyes, floppy ears, and gold metallic skin. It had legs with loose flaps of a translucent material that seemed to function as wings and propelled itself by expelling some gaseous substance from its posterior. Radiant golden space puppy peered into the cockpit, and seemed to smile. Dr. Srinivasan waved. Transfixed by its new friends, the puppy did not notice the big axe fly up from behind and grab his axe. Now the puppy was sad. As Señora Fuego re-entered the ship, the big axe was on his way.
"Let's fly this bird home," commanded Ms. O. Dr. Srinivasan's fingers danced on the control panel. After a few moments, they heard the exit hatch close and lock, meaning the full crew was inside. With a jolt, the engines engaged, and they headed back toward Earth.
The puppy remained on the windshield, his alien puppy paws somehow able to cling to Space Cup One.
"All right, the worst is over," Ms. O predicted.
Inspector Well actually shook his head.
"Well, actually, if you look at that animal, you can see that he can survive in outer space and most likely feeds on something very similar to rocket fuel, so he's probably going to attack our tanks any moment. If you possessed my powers of perception, you could tell he consumes rocket fuel based on the color spectrum of his flatulence. No offense."
The rest of the cockpit crew regarded each other for a few seconds, considering the ramifications. As they looked back out the window, they saw the space puppy sniff and then disappear. Dr. Srinivasan looked expectantly at Ms. O until she asked,
"What?" "I want you to order me to engage evasive maneuvers."
"Fine." The ship dropped and raised and zigged and zagged. Were there intergalactic highway patrol officers, one would have pulled them over and asked Dr. Srinivasan to get out and spacewalk a straight line. On the outboard camera, they could see the puppy fly off the ship, only to catch up again and scratch at the fuel tanks. It was terrifying and adorable. Terradorable. Adorifying. Radiant golden space puppy continued its perilous dance with the ship for an unbearable period of time until Dr. Srinivasan ordered everyone back to their seats to prepare for re-entry. Andrea floated down to the big axe, who was wiping down his axe.
"I'm contractually obligated not to ask if you're okay. As soon as you say you are, however, I can start making fun of you for losing your axe to a space puppy."
The big axe did not look away from his axe as he replied,
"I thought he looked more like a baby seal with leg wings, but I probably deserve that. I'm fine. I went through the wormhole."
"That sounds fun."
"Oh, definitely. Hung out, met an alternate universe version of you who immediately wanted to marry me." The big axe quipped, "But she was a horrible dancer, so I came back."
"She sounds awful."
Andrea strapped into her seat, and the big axe followed after securing his axe. Once settled in, he turned and said,
"It's not good news on the other side of that thing."
"I will continue to hope we're playing the bizarro Andrea game and not actually describing the real incoming menace from space." What she could only assume was radiant golden space puppy slammed against the ship, moving them off course. She could feel and hear the scratching behind her head. She was going to die the cutest space death ever, ripped out into the void of space as fuel tanks exploded, her flesh aflame, gasping for air, and a space puppy licking her face. Dr. Srinivasan's voice broke in over the speaker.
"Thank you to everyone for participating in this initial beta product test for Space Cup One."
"You never called it a test before,"
the big axe yelled up.
"We are now entering the Earth's atmosphere," Dr. Srinivasan continued. "The good news is the space bunny should burn up and die any moment now."
"It looks nothing like a bunny," Andrea said to herself.
"The bad news," continued Dr. Srinivasan, "is that we have to hit the planet at a very exact angle. Now, if you think of Earth as a basketball..."
"We've all seen Apollo 13, Doc. Just fly the ship,"
the big axe yelled as radiant golden space puppy rammed them again. Yet another slam knocked them even more off course. Dr. Srinivasan corrected their trajectory, and they continued their approach of Earth. She could feel the heat coming through the walls as the ship shook violently. Over the loudspeaker, they heard the mortified but also a little bit stoked voice of Dr. Srinivasan say, "Doing great!" Andrea and the big axe both gripped their seats tightly as the craft rocked them side to side. Looking up at Andrea, he said,
"I just want you to know that if we die in this ship right now, my biggest regret is not taking you up on second base before."
"Same," she responded. "At least we won't have to live with our regret much longer." The ship straightened, the heat intensified, and Andrea heard the well-meaning and sorrowful arfs of Radiant Golden Space Puppy, sounding like its owner was trying to leave for work when it just wanted to play and cuddle.
"See? Seal noises," said the big axe.
"Puppy noises," countered Andrea. The ship began to cool, and they heard a loud kaboom! As the speed decreased and the cringe-inducing noises disappeared, Andrea's heart slowed to near a normal pace. Then they slammed into something, or at least it felt that way.
"Sorry," said Dr. Srinivasan. "I forgot to mention that we did not develop this ship for flight within Earth's atmosphere, and that we would be deploying a parachute. Ha! Oh, wait. Let me do this again."
Dr. Srinivasan cleared his throat and restarted.
"This is Captain Dr. Srinivasan of Space Cup 1. We have deployed our parachute and will be landing in a few minutes in the Atlantic Ocean just south of Coney Island, where our team is scheduled to collect us."
The big axe smiled.
"Coney Island? Win me a stuffed bear?"
"If we can find an air hockey table, I will school you," Andrea replied. With a mighty shake of his head, the big axe declared,
"I'm too competitive. I'd win, and if you start winning, I'll just cut the table in half."
"It's too bad your dad didn't also leave you a book on good sportsmanship along with the axe."
"He was a flawed man, no doubt."
They floated along for a while until striking something that Andrea, liberal arts major and non-scientist, could tell was not water. All of the Thumb's occupants unstrapped and climbed to the exit hatch. When they opened it, they found a lack of the Atlantic Ocean.
"We went slightly off course," admitted Dr. Srinivasan. "We landed on 3rd Avenue in the South Bronx."
Below them sat a gray Hyundai Elantra. In front of them stood Jackson Auto Repair. A very confused group of mechanics who had been working on the cars in the shop now stood outside staring at them. Andrea and Ms. O climbed down a rope ladder first.
"Good afternoon," Ms. O said. "No one in the car, right?"
The still dazed men shook their heads in affirmation. Dr. Srinivasan and Inspector Well actually followed after them. When Senora Fuego popped her head out, the men broke out in applause.
"My daughter loves you!" one yelled, followed by "Fuego! Fuego! Fuego!"
When the big axe eschewed the ladder for a single leap to the ground, the mechanics cheered even louder. An older gentleman with a work shirt that read Jackson approached Ms. O and asked,
"That your car?"
"Well, it's more of a spaceship, but yes," she answered.
"Got some damage from where it landed on the Hyundai. Could fix that for you."
Ms. O took a moment to weigh her options. "Andrea, Mr. Jackson is going to fix the scrapes we picked up on the trip. Please work out payment with him. Remember to emphasize discretion. Also, Senora Fuego and the Big Axe would love to stick around for some pictures. Perhaps y'all young fellas would like to call up your families and see if they'd like to meet them. If anyone asks, we certainly did not crash land here." All parties seemed satisfied until the mechanics froze in complete and utter fear at the sight of a slightly scuffed-up Radiant Golden Space Puppy. Up close, it became apparent that while it looked like a puppy, and Andrea was never going to bend on the fact that it looked like a puppy, it was about 3 feet high on 4 legs and would easily have been able to slow dance with Andrea on 2. The rocket-fuel-drinking alien yipped and leapt into the Big Axe's arms. It licked his face with its metallic space tongue. As the cup team looked on, not sure what to do, Mr. Jackson leaned in and whispered to Miss O,
"So, my nephew, Taekwon, moves so fast no one can see him.
Just moves fast, or does he experience time differently?" Ms. O inquired.
"He says he has trouble talking to people because everything moves too slow."
"Have Andrea set up an interview." The puppy continued to lick the Big Axe's face. It looked like the greatest day of its puppy life. Dr. Srinivasan replayed the video for Ms. O, Andrea, and the assembled superheroes in Ms. O's office. The Big Axe, who had seen the alien ships in person, was joined by Rabbi Diamond, Senora Fuego, Inspector Well Actually, Cosmina, King Tiger, and Permafrost. It was late, and there was pizza. Andrea realized she had never seen Rabbi Diamond eat and wondered how his insides processed food. Did they churn it up like a human body's? Did Diamond's inside of him cut it up? What did his poops look like? These were not appropriate questions, and Andrea again felt grateful for the no-questions restriction of her position. But really, what did they look like?
"Should we be worried about the weird space rat you picked up?"
Senora Fuego asked, referring to Radiant Golden Space Puppy, whom in-depth scientific inspection had proven to be a male, currently sitting on the Big Axe's lap.
"Maybe," answered Dr. Srinivasan, "but he has been happy and pleasant since we brought him into HQ. We had some issues separating him from the Big Axe, but we are going to try stationing him in the containment room in the lab with a pair of the Big Axe's overalls and pictures of the Big Axe taped to the walls."
The group directed their attention to the video display as they watched the camera cross through the wormhole. The swirling pools of light disappeared and revealed a completely different view.
"They look like spiders," suggested Cosmina, as the three alien spaceships came into view.
She was not wrong. Each had a central hub shaped like a light bulb with the bottom pointed forward. Attached to the hubs were six legs, which drifted below. Solid dark green exteriors with no designs or writing made it appear at first that the ships were actually living organisms, but the flicker of lights inside the hubs gave hints of artificial construction. Dr. Srinivasan also pointed out exhaust ports and the glint on metal caused by light from an unknown star reflecting off the ships. The vessels did not appear to move at all, waiting just outside the wormhole.
"No, not spider. Spider have eight legs," Permafrost shot back. "I know spider. I love science."
They again heard the grumbling sounds emerging from the lead ship, which sounded to Andrea like a drunk New Englander trying to speak Castilian Spanish. Radiant Golden Space Puppy then pounced into view to grab the axe with the camera, and it became hard to make sense of any of the images as the camera flipped every direction. A few moments later, the view froze on the Big Axe emerging from the wormhole.
"Get him, the Big Axe! Get him!" Senora Fuego cheered at the screen.
Back on the video, the Big Axe accelerated toward Radiant Golden Space Puppy, who made excited space puppy noises and turned toward the ships. He faked left and turned right, then right again, heading straight back to the wormhole. The camera turned behind him to reveal the Big Axe's look of intense annoyance mixed with a slight amusement that Andrea recognized. That was the face he made when tickled. Was it dangerous to tickle a supergiant? Ms. O turned off the television as Radiant Golden Space Puppy crossed back through the wormhole and Space Cup 1 came into view. Everyone took a moment to digest the gravity of the situation before King Tiger asked,
"Why was I not included? I'm the leader of the team."
"You're just jealous," said Senora Fuego. "You wish you had a giant space rat."
On cue,
Radiant Golden Space Puppy licked the Big Axe's face.
It's all yours if you want it.
He looks like a space pig and probably has diseases, Cosmina declared. Dr. Srinivasan ignored the banter, stood up, and said,
We have analyzed the language. We have found that it is a variant of a common language used in the Ajax solar system, which is
11 billion miles away, right?
Señora Fuego cut in.
Approximately, Dr. Srinivasan replied with an awkward smirk, We have a reasonably good grasp on the language and should be able to communicate with them when they get here.
Cool! Boomed the Big Axe. We could ask for their sign and see if they want to get a malted milkshake with us.
King Tiger raised an eyebrow, still a little sore about not going on the space trip.
Just tell us what they're saying.
In the video, they are projecting out a message that appears to say, Arrival of our being is not chronologically distant from the present.
Rabbi Diamond stood, his mouth open a little bit. And Andrea realized he had not said anything the whole meeting. He composed himself and said,
They're Sparnaxians. They're saying we are coming. That is what they are saying. I have an information crystal from my mother that can tell you far more about them.
Is it... King Tiger tried to phrase it precisely.
They destroyed my home planet.
No one spoke until Señora Fuego softly broke in with,
You seem super obsessed with the whole my home planet was destroyed thing, man.
Too soon,
quipped Rabbi Diamond. Señora Fuego winked.
Love you, Rebbe.
Love you too, Fuegs.
Chapter 15. Krabby, Warehouse Manager. On a normal day, Andrea could practically sleepwalk to work, or at least make it all the way there blindfolded. And to the seven, to the subway of super secrecy, boom. This morning, however, the N train was shut down for repairs in Queens, and thus she had to take a replacement shuttle bus crowded with fellow commuters loudly conversing.
The Dow sucks today, bro. I'm just like, tired of doing group projects.
I cannot wait until I graduate.
Can you believe she would say that to me?
Me? She said that to me.
Can you believe that?
The N train was always crowded, but somehow this shuttle bus exacerbated all the worst parts of commuting. The smells, the people, and the slowness. After 34 minutes, the bus completed its 2.5-mile drive and arrived at Queensboro Plaza, where she boarded the 7 train. The 7 train sat for 20 minutes because of signal problems. Andrea stood in a car so tightly packed she probably could have lifted her legs and not fallen, and she longed for the salad days of the shuttle bus. When the 7 finally did move, it made a few more stops before coming to a halt under the East River. When a subway preacher began calling out about the end of times, she wanted to call back,
We're working on that, but right now our VP of Operations Administrative Assistant is stuck on the subway and some people here smell. Yes, however, the end of times would be nigh were it not for how great our company is.
She did not say this. Also, the train smelled, and she felt like maybe the end of times would not be the worst thing that could happen. When she finally reached Grand Central, she sprinted up the stairs and over to the shuttle train, which was just leaving. When it returned, 10 minutes later, she boarded and showed her ID to the guard, who pointed at her shoe and commented,
Stepped in it.
She had. Rather than in train, she exited the station, bought wet wipes from a bodega, cleaned her shoe in the street, ran into an old friend she had not seen since high school.
Are you cleaning dog poop off your shoe? Let's chat sometime.
And apologized in her mind to all of her fellow travelers on the 7 she had blamed for the smell. She left the coffee shop, returned to the subway, and saw the shuttle train just as it was leaving. It returned 5 minutes later,
She boarded without incident, and the rest of the trip went according to schedule. The back car split off, began its series of twists and turns designed to disorient, and finally pulled in at Cup HQ. Andrea entered the buttonless elevator, said her name, and rose up to her floor. Frustrated but smiling for her co-workers, she walked to her desk and sat down at 7:59 a.m. 1 minute early. She budgeted for just these sorts of events. Usually she had time to do a crossword, but not so today.